Okay, hallelujah, in the name of Lord Jesus Christ, we shall begin our class for the book of Ephesians. According to the schedule, this time we will spend five sessions. We'll spend 5 hours, well, 50 minutes class over the book of Ephesians. No? Book of Ephesians, as you know, is one of the books written by Apostle Paul. Out of all the books that he wrote in the New Testament, huh? Well, since we only have 5 sessions, I will try to avoid sidetracking, which for those students who has been in my class for a while, you know, I have a very, very bad tendency. I just go everywhere. So if I really gone too far, please do remind me. Call me back. And just told me, Pastor, get back to Ephesians. Okay, then I'll get your point. Okay? All right, Ephesians, of course, is addressed to the members in the church of Ephesus. But before we go into the book itself, we need to know something about the background, of this city, and also the reason that he wrote this book. The city, Ephesus, is actually a very, very famous city in the early history. It's a city with history. It's a city that's well known, that has been exist for a long time. And this city is considered as a commercial city. You know that in the ancient time, they do not have airplane to carry cargoes. So location of the city becomes very crucial. And Ephesus is located in a very important spot. You can check the map yourself. Because you just flip it to the Bible, look at the map yourself. You don't have to do it right now, right here. Just to let you know that it occupied some important location. That's why a lot of merchants need to pass the city in order to continue their journey. Many cities in the ancient times, many cities were able to develop and be strong because their location, for example, Laodicea, or for example, Corinth. Those are all commercial cities, which means that because at that time, commerce are basically carried out by traders. They use their camel, load up their merchandise, take on the long journey, so they need some spot to replenish, maybe water, maybe food, or some place to trade their merchandise. So some city come to exist and become big and strong with more and more population because their location is all about location. Also, Ephesus is considered a commercial city. Because of their location, that is actually a wealthy city, a city with a lot of commerce going on, high tax, and then a lot of money. And another thing about this city, you know what? There are 3 things that you need to know about this city. One, money. It's a commercial town, so a lot of money. Number two, they are known for Artemis, the temple. Hey, it's not my fault, okay? All right. Which one is better? Which one is more colorful for you? Better? Doing okay? No? Oh, it's the angle, right? So what does that tell you? That tell you one thing. The two brothers who carry this for us is very selfish. No? They only care about their side. Yeah. Is this okay? If it's not, it's too bad. Yep. So, you know, the first thing we know is that this city is very wealthy, commercial town, a high population, a lot of money going on, trading, people looking after money. Second thing that we need to know is they are known for the temple. I can't spell Artemis. A-R-T-M-I-S? Ah, it doesn't matter. A-R-T-E. It's an idol. What do you want? We don't memorize the name of the idols. Artemis, okay? They are known for the temple of Artemis. Who is Artemis? You can also call her Diana, the goddess of moon, right? But the thing is, at that time they have so-called Greek mythology and also Rome mythology. And they have the same god with different names, okay? So Artemis is the meaning is Fa Guang Zi, huh? The one that emitting the light, goddess of light. And then, of course, it was also known as the moon, goddess of moon, or goddess of hunter. Depends on what mythology that you read. They can go all different places. So Artemis has a very huge temple in the city of Ephesus. And even until today, it still exists, but only with one pillar. That's the only thing left. It was called one of the seven wonders. This is not the seven wonders that you know today. Today, what do you know about? You know the Great Wall, right? It's not. They have the ancient seven wonder. And they have the early history seven wonder, and then they have the present day seven wonder. So this seven wonder, nobody ever seen. It's only go by mythologies. It's in the ancient story, mythology stories. So the early ancient seven wonders, nobody knows. The early seven wonders are the seven wonders that people think that they exist, and they found some ruins, and they were able to imagine or sort of do some archaeology finding to look. Maybe, this is a maybe, huh? Maybe once upon a time it looked so grandeur, so beautiful. But the thing is, only ruin left. And of course, this is the present day still exists. So this is the seven wonder that you know by. But when we say that the temple of Artemis in Ephesus, today, only one pillar. Oh, the foundation is still there, though. So if you go to the Google Earth, and then you can still see some sort of like ruins or some floor, some foundations. But the only pillar left is a man-made pillar many, many years after that. There are some people who go there and who look at it, and they just pick up some of the rock on the floor and just put it together and make it a pillar as a memory. Just a memory. So even the only pillar left today is not from the ancient time. It's not from the time of Jesus. Okay, but it was also known as one of the seven wonders because Artemis is one of their main gods, one of their main gods that they believe. Okay. So, because they believe that the Artemis is the one that provides good fortunes, you go hunting at night, she give you good luck, give you good fortune, so you are able to bring back your gains, your games, and then you can sell it, you can make a good life. So you know what? Many, many people worship Artemis, and the temple, one of the biggest temples is in Ephesus. Okay, that's the second thing that we know about this city. Rich people like God or goddess that brings money. Okay, number three is the ratio of population. Ratio of population. This city is one of the very few that have about the same Gentile believers as well as Jewish believers. You know that in the time of Jesus or in the apostolic times, they all believe in Jesus, but still you see a lie. You see the segregation. You see the differences. So Jewish people usually stay by themselves and Gentile believers stand by themselves. But this is one of the very rare case that in the church of Ephesus, they have about 50-50. They have Gentile believer able to coexist and living with the Jewish believers. Okay? So that's one thing very unique. Usually you don't see that. Do not think that after they believe in Jesus, in apostolic church, they believe in Jesus. Wow, they are filled by the Holy Spirit and everybody are so amiable and lovable. No. No. After all, for a few thousand years, you were brainwashed by the Mosaic Law. It's very, very difficult for you to, out of nowhere, and get this enlightenment, and suddenly you can embrace a Gentile. It's not that easy. It took a long time. It took a long time for the Jewish believers to start accept the Gentile believers as equal. But Ephesus is different. Ephesus is one of very few that they are able to associate, mingle, living together, no problem. No problem. That's why Paul spoke highly of this church. Paul liked this church because they are one of the very first church that was able to fully understand what does it mean that in God's eyes it's all the same. What does it mean by gospel shall reach the Gentiles and bring the soul back? Okay? So these are the three things that's rather unique about the church, the location, about Ephesus, the city of Ephesus. Next, structure. We would like to talk about the structure of this book. It's not a big book. It's not a lengthy, big book. It's not like 50 chapters. But you know what? Still, even as a small book, we still need to look into the structure. So basically, an easier way you can remember this book by 1, 2, 3, 4. One is one theme, which is church. So one theme is church. The book is fully emphasized on the church. The idea of church, the concept of church, what is church? Please do remember when we mention the term church, do not associate with this building. Do not associate with TJC. Do not associate with... It goes beyond that. It's talking about the essence, the idea, the essence behind one member, one location, or one building. It's not that. He was talking about what is the true essence, the real substance that involves in the church, okay? So the first theme, the one point is the whole book is circled around one theme, which is church. Second, two parts. Chapter 1 to chapter 3 is about the concept of God's church. So, you know what? From chapter 1 to chapter 3 is emphasized. These three chapters, chapter 1 to 3 emphasize more about the theological, more like theories, understandings, concepts. And from 4 to 6, it's not. From chapter 4 to chapter 6, is life in God's church. So, chapter 1 to chapter 3 is more conceptual. Chapter 4 to chapter 6 is more practical. Like, true adaptation of what you need to do to be in God's church. Okay? So far, so good? This is very simple, right? But we have to do this, no? So, if you want to remember what is covered in Ephesus, in the book of Ephesians, no? One theme, which is church, two parts, which is the concept and the life application of the church, and you have three stages, or three processes, no? Three stages, A, let me put it easy. The past, B, the present, C, the future. Why do I say that? I was going to give you something different. But the idea is, it mentioned three things. In Book of Ephesians, it basically talks about three things. One, in the past, live in sin. No hope. That's the past. Oh, start from chapter 1, chapter 2. He talked about once upon a time we have nothing to do with salvation. We were Gentile. We have no part. And we can only groan in sin and die in desperation. That's the old days. And then chapter 3, it goes into present. He said, but today we are saved by the grace of God. Therefore, we need to live like the children of God. Okay, that's what we need to do. And then 3, it goes into the future. Fully equip yourself. Equip yourself and ready to battle. Okay? So this is the three stage of a Christian life. Whether you like it or not, you and I, we are the same. We need to go through this three stage. Okay? So do not consider it easy. Do not think that, you know what? I believe in Jesus. I'm baptized. I have Holy Spirit. I am done. And I'm just waiting to die. It's not that easy. There is still a long way, a long, long, long way that we have to do, that we have to go. Oh. Also, once upon a time, we live in sin, but no more. That's it. Too much. No more. So we were given the grace of salvation, that in Book of Ephesians, it says what? The light shine upon us. So we were able to enter into the light and be called the children of God. That's the status that was given to us today. Giving to us today. But do not forget. You know what? Let's look at verse. Let's read 1 John. Let's do 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. 1 John chapter 3, verse 2. Okay, then he says, beloved, now we are children of God. Now we are children of God, and it has not yet been revealed what it should be. So what does it mean? John is telling you and I, today, good for you, you are the children of God. Oh, yeah, I'm the children of God. But he also tells you, what will be in the future? Not yet known. Okay? So after that, John starts to tell us. After that, John continued to say, what do we need to do in order to keep our status as the children of God to the day that we win or to the day that we die? Okay? Also, acquiring, receiving the status, the title as the children of God is not the end. It's only the beginning of the journey. Just like you want to attend a marathon, you have to register. And then you have to get what? Get a number that you can just put it there. And then, hey, you officially qualify. But does that mean you're going to win the prize? No. Far be it. Far from it. Just because you are qualified doesn't mean that you will win at the end. Just like if you register for NYTS, doesn't mean that you will show up for NYTS. Just because you show up for NYTS doesn't mean that you're going to graduate from NYTS. Hope this is not too hurtful to you. But seriously speaking, some of you been here, who is the third year? Okay? Look around you. How many are still here with you all these 3 years? Not many, right? Not many of you are able to continue, like, oh, you know what, we come back this year, we come back next year, we come back every year for 3 years consecutively. It's not easy. A lot of times it's not about if you want it or not. It's just there are things. There are things. Okay? That's how life is. Just like, you know what, you want to come here, you want to, hey, you register. That's only the first step. And then you want to come, hey, the flight got canceled. What can you do about it? Doesn't, you know, what I want to tell you is, just because you register doesn't mean you will come. Just because you come doesn't mean that you are able to finish the journey. Same thing with your faith. It's all the same. Everything about life, especially our spiritual journey. You can come, you can run, you can register, you can obtain a number, you can run. But have during the whole running experience, during the whole process, many things could happen. Many things could happen. That's why the Bible keep on reminding us, for those who endure to the end can be saved. Only those who are able to last to the end can be saved. Okay? Also, the Bible told us that we need to be trembled and in fear to complete, to accomplish our task of salvation. In trembled and in fear. The Bible not say, oh, you know, be joy, be glad, be merry, enjoy your life, and happily see you in heaven. Sorry, it never like that. Never like that. Jesus Christ made it very clear from the time of John the Baptist until today, heavenly kingdom is for those who strive and strive hard. Okay? So, this is the third stage of our spiritual life. The first stage is you need to get away from your old self. Second stage is you have to receive Jesus in your life. But this is the most important because we are all here. We need to be able to prepare, equip, and be ready so we stay alive. What? This is the three stages that was covered in the book of Ephesians. And the next four, that's what happens when you walk around. Four types of Christian life. Okay? And this four type of Christian life is what this is about. That also go through the whole book of Ephesians. Huh? First of all, life of hope. Okay? Ephesians chapter 1 talk about hope. As a Christian, as a believer, hope is a must. Okay? Number 2 is life of maturity. What does it mean by overcome evil? How do you grow mature and no longer be a baby? You know what the Bible talk about? Little children. Jesus said, let the little children come to me. And then what happened? The disciples said, no. And then what? Jesus was angry. Jesus was angry with them. And he said to them that unless you wake up, you won't hear anything. Unless you return to like a little children and
you shall not enter the kingdom of God.
Thank you. Unless you return like a little children, you cannot enter into the kingdom of God. Huh? So in some place in the Bible, he said you should become like a little children. But in book of Ephesians says you should not be like a little children. Is there any contradiction toward this concept? You shouldn't. Because now we are grasping, we are taking different characteristics of little children to learn from. In terms of purity, trust, reliance, you need to be like a little children. But do not be like little children in all things. Why? They are easily persuaded. They are easily deceived. Right? Today, if I come to you, Andrew, you know what? I like your, what is that thing? Oh, I like your, no, I don't like your surface. If I come to you and say, hey, you know what? That thing is nice. I'll trade you. But this is all I have. But I like it so much. Usually, when I put it at home, I put it in a case, in a very nice, well-made case. And can I trade with you? No heart. So cruel. You know what? This is what happened. Why wouldn't he trade with me? Because the value. Because he was able to have a full assessment of the real value of what he has and what I have. Okay? But the thing is, when you go to little kid, you don't get that. One thing I used to enjoy to do is to trick my kids. Oh, it didn't work after they turned 3. I used to exchange their, you know that for Chinese we get red envelopes, right? Like yearly, Chinese New Year, you get some money from the parents, grandparents. But the thing is, what the kids need money for? So, usually the thing is, I'm a very fair father. I never brutally, unreasonably take away their stuff without a fair conversation, communication, and trade. Hey, so I always get their full agreement. Hey, daddy got some candy here. You know what? Sure. She will look at the papers. She'll look at the papers. No, can't do anything with it. And she see the cake, she see the candy, she see ice cream. I was like, you know, ice cream, vanilla. She'll give me everything. She'll just give me, give me the ice cream. She has no problem trading with me because she doesn't know the value. She doesn't know the small red bag that she gave to me can buy a few hundred ice cream. She can't. Because she has no idea. And hey, I never take it one from her. I trade her. So I don't feel guilty. Okay? Don't try to make me feel bad. But you know what? After Ariana turned 3, it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't. I was like, you know what? Daddy trade you. And she said, no. Mama say no. Yeah, Mama said she will give her something better. I was like, but you know what? I can save it up for you. What if your naughty brother take it and tear it apart? I can store it for you. When you turn 25, I can give it back. It doesn't work. She doesn't believe me anymore. But hey, because she grew up. You know what? What is the sign of maturity? The sign of maturity is that you are able to fully evaluate the true value of yourself and what you have. And apparently, not every one of you obtain this kind of ability even they grow older. Just because you grow older doesn't mean that you naturally, automatically acquire the ability of fully assess your own value and what you have, the value of what you own. Also, two things, your own value and the value of the things that you own. Okay? Do remember that. So what is sign of maturity? That you are able to see and know what is more important. You are able to tell what is more valuable. And no, you do not undersold yourself or undersold what you have. Okay? So, in the book of Ephesus, the book of Ephesians, it says that do not be like little children. You need to grow and be mature so that you are not easily persuaded and swim back and forth by the wind of heresies. Okay? That's the second thing. Life of maturity. And then number 3 is life of transformation. Yes, life of transformation. Okay? Once you are able to adapt, understand why you believe in Jesus, why you become a Christian, what is more valuable that you shall pursue after. you are able to understand the meaning of your faith, then you are mature. Then you are mature. As I say, it doesn't go by age. You can be 35 and still think that your faith is just a waste of time. You can be 45 and still be very angry when you need to come to church every Sabbath. You can, because if you're unable to understand the value of it, then you know what? You are a child. Who is the oldest child recorded in the Bible? That's a weird question, right? What kind of question is that? You know what? There's a person named Demas. He's probably considered the oldest. Well, I shouldn't say the oldest. He was considered as a person in an age that he's supposed to be mature, but still very very childish. The Bible recalls him three times. Demas, in Colossians, in 2 Timothy, and I don't remember where is the third time. But you know what? Mainly, he was recorded as, he says that, my dear friend, Demas. Okay? At that time, they were working together in the book of Colossians. My dear friend, Demas. And then he says, my good worker, Demas. How about if you go to 2 Timothy, yeah? Let's turn to 2 Timothy. Let's turn to 2 Timothy chapter... 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 9. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verse 9. In here says, be diligent to come to me quickly. Verse 10. For Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world, and has departed for Thessalonica. This is the last word about this person, Demas. This is the last description about the person named Demas. But every time when I think about him, I feel terrible. I feel terrible. The first time, my dear friend. The second time, my good worker. The third time, Demas so loved the world and he departed from the ministry, from his faith. Okay? So, time. Time is your greatest challenge in your faith, which is future. Future. If we are unable to reach the end point in this journey, if we are unable to reach, you know, when you start a race, when you get on the field, if you cannot finish it, it doesn't matter how swift, how fast you run in the beginning, it's useless. It doesn't matter. You have to remember, the more effort that you exert in the beginning, the more tragic it seems when you are unable to finish. It doesn't matter how fast or how slow you are. When you go on a race, when you go on a marathon, it doesn't matter how fast or how slow you go. When you finish crossing the line, you have won for yourself. It's accomplishment. It's achievement. It's a win for yourself. But it doesn't matter how fast you go if you do not. You just like, you know, you run for 20 miles, you know, only like another 5 miles to go. You run, you are exhausted, and you're like, you know what, forget about it. I don't have to put up with this. I just go home and sit on the couch and watching TV. You could. That's a choice. But everything that you have put in for the first 20 miles for the first few hours down to the drain. Because there's nothing for you to go back and remember. Many years later, when you talk to your grandkids, when they're about to go through their first marathon in life, you cannot say, go, be like grandpa. No, you can't. You're like, go. Because you don't want to say anything about it. You don't want your grandkids to know that, oh, you know what, grandpa just tired. You don't want to say anything about it because there's nothing to talk about. That's what happened to faith. If we are unable to finish, there's nothing to talk about. So crossing the line, crossing the finish line is the most crucial thing in your faith. Not seeing a vision, not having a lot of friends, not doing a lot of holy work, all those are good. But if you do not cross the finish line, the more you put in today, the sadder it is at the end. Okay? So that's another thing. Life of transformation. So in order for us to be able to finish the race, in the book of Ephesians, it says that, okay, you need to do this, do this, do this, and you need to be able to live a new life. And what kind of new life? And then he continues. Apostle Paul starts to talk about what kind of new life that you must have in order to qualify you. Not only stay on the race, but able to finish the race. Huh? That's number three. And then number four is the life of war. The life of fighting a battle and win. Life of war. As we said it earlier, Matthew chapter 11, it says that Jesus said, from the time of John the Baptist until today, heavenly kingdom is for those who strive. In the original original text, it means it's for those who battle, for those who fight and push violently, brutally. Okay? So please do remember, believing in Jesus is never harmonious, right? It's never something gentle, cozy, and comfortable. It's never that. Never. Strive, battle, push your way through and fight. Do not do that to other members. Okay? Not physically, please do remember next time. Don't be brutal and mean to your fellow members. What Jesus is saying is you have to be ready to fight a violent battle with Satan. That's why in 1 Corinthians it says that do remember we are not fighting for those who belong to the flesh. We are not fighting a flesh battle. So you do weight training, lifting. Oh, you know what? Let me, you know, I can lift at 300 pounds. So let me go and fight with Satan. Doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that. We are fighting for the evil spirit hovering over the sky in the air. So your physical strength counts very little. I wouldn't say counts for nothing, though. Please do remember, it do count for something. It does. When you're fighting a spiritual battle, your physical strength does come for something. What does it come for? What does it come for? If you have a very, very weak health, to the point that you can only lie on the bed and unable to attend seminars like NYTS, it does have some negative drawback for your faith. It could go either way. You could be on the bed, so sick. Let me rely on the Lord, trusting the Lord. And maybe it goes very positive direction. But you could also go to the other direction. You know what? I'm just tired. You know what? I work for a whole day. I'll just skip the church for tonight. You could. And you know, you can tell yourself, God is very understanding. He knows I work for a whole day. He knows I'm tired. He knows I go to church. It just doze off. You could fully excuse yourself and justify when you are physically fatigued, very tired. You could. So you know what physical strength does? It's not everything, but it does have some small impact. Small impact for your faith. Okay? But still, that's why Bible says what? So exercise does little benefit. But little benefit is still some benefit. Little benefit is still some benefit. Okay? So, for example, some of you might think about, oh, one day I will go to Africa. Any of you ever thought about it? After you listen to the story from Pastor Vudi, he always tell you the scary part. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. For me. You know what? There was once I was in Togo, and then I was able to take some picture of what I do there, and I send it back to some church member, huh? And then they text me back. Pastor, which Africa are you at right now? I was showing them, I was eating crepe at, because Togo is a French-speaking place. And they were like, I was showing them I would have egg, we have crepes, we have French toast and butter. And he's like, which Africa are you at? Because they always listen to the Africa. It's a lot of fun. If there's no malaria. It's a lifetime experience, it is. But if you are thinking about going to Africa, and you really wish one day you would go there, good for you. But what do you do other than wishing and dreaming? What do you do? Is there anything that you do that make you qualify to go to Africa? You can go from all different aspects. Physically speaking, if you go to Africa and end up, the pastor need to carry you because you faint on the road. It's too much. The sun is too hot. And haven't exercised for 5 years. You know what? Please don't. We carry our own luggage and we don't want to carry you on our back. Okay? We'll pray for you. You know, that's the thing. If we are not at least to the minimum, like if we do not take care of our own health, you always sleep at 4 a.m. and wake up at 2 in the afternoon, we don't want you in Africa. Sorry. We don't. Because you will not be able to meet the requirement both in terms of schedule or in terms of physical aspects. Okay? If every morning it takes you 2 hours to put on the makeup. Nothing. I'm not going too far. Okay. Brother. You know what I want to say, right? Okay, if you take you 2 hours to put on makeups every morning, you won't have that leverage in. I'm not saying it's, you cannot do it. If you have the leverage, you want to do it, hey, that's your choice. But if you want to go to Africa, you have to be mentally prepared. You don't have that leverage. Do not become a burden. When you are in Africa, we wake up at 6, and we need to go on the road, and you tell the pastor, I need 2 hours. I cannot go see anyone without all my painting. No. I know what you call that. Cosmetic. Not painting, sorry. Sorry, my bad. So you know what? Prepare yourself that you are able to seriously not just dream, want, desire to do something. Prepare yourself to be ready when the calling is upon you. Another thing. Okay, put away the physical aspect. Okay, now you are physically fit, strong, like Pastor Woody, always take you into the jungle, no problem. Good for you. Next. Are you spiritually ready? I'm not talking about kneeling down and pray for 2 hours. A day, 3 hours a day. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about, are you able to talk to any truth seekers and able to talk about our doctrine clearly? Because in Africa, I can tell you, 90% of them are Christian and some of them are extremely well-versed. There's a lousy game in the church, in Africa church, that I really hate to play. Every time when they start playing that game, I find some reason to leave. I just leave. You know what they do? When they have nothing to do, you know what they do? We have a worker seminars, right? So you have like 20, 30 local workers from all different regions. Or they work for a week, or you know, it took them a long time. And then we gather them together, we give them a seminar, we give them classes, right? But you know, when they have break, when they have free time, they play this terrible game. You know what they play? They will have a guy standing in the front, and the guy will read a verse. And then they ask you to say what book, what chapter, and what verse. The things, what marvels to me is they do have people raise their hand. And they have to fight, me. And I was like, let me check the kitchen. Let me see if the dinner is ready. I can't play those games. They are extremely well-versed. Because Bible is probably the only book that they have. So you know what? For them, reading Bible is entertainment. If we can read Bible as much as we read people's blog or Facebook, I'm telling you, you memorize the Bible front to back to front already. But the thing is, for them, that's like, for them to read Bible is like, you know, it's fun, it's entertaining, it's their It's what they do. It's what they do. Okay? So you know what? When you go to Africa, if you want to go to Africa, you have to ask yourself, are you able to really communicate, to debate? Are you able to argue about what you truly believe and convince through the Bible verses? And here, explained it. You know what? So I'm saying that preparation for battle is crucial for your servitude and for your survival. Dreaming is always good, but the question is always, how do you convert your dream to reality? Or just stay as daydreaming? There's a difference. So the last thing that the Apostle Paul talked about in Ephesians is ready, equip, prepare, and march out for the Lord. That's all. Praise and blessings.